Welcome back to season two of the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast, equipping you to successfully pursue the college of your dreams. We believe everyone deserves to reach their full potential, and the admissions process shouldn't hold you back.
So, should you be taking the full IBDP? Should you be taking a mix of IB classes and AP classes? Should you be doing something else? This is an incredible opportunity that we have today here on the Ivy League Prep Academy podcast, because I have Nandita Nair, who is a student in a school that has options for IB, for full IB, for blended programs, for full AP, and she has successfully completed the full IBDP program, so the diploma program in the International Baccalaureate. And Nandita, this is so fun. Humor me for a second before I pull you into the podcast. Nandita reconnected with me just a few days ago after years off. So she was in a cohort of the Ivy League Challenge a few years ago, I believe as a freshman. And now Nandita is a senior with a very good IBDP predicted score, which I have agreed to not share too many details there. But suffice it to say, the kind of score that everyone who gets into the program wants to have. And she's here to share with us kind of the effects of the Ivy League Challenge on her high school experience, and also to help us understand the IB, the International Baccalaureate, and all of its, the good, the bad, the ugly, the wonderful, and everything in between, and also help us kind of understand from a student's perspective, what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, and how do we succeed in the IBDP, which is an incredible topic. And so, Nandita, I don't know if I have enough words to share my full gratitude for you for being here today. I think this is a topic that a lot of listeners are really excited about. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Garn. I'm so excited to be on the podcast today.
This is so interesting because, unlike a lot of my podcast interviews, I haven't talked to you in a few years. I don't know if it's been 3 years or 2.5 or 3.5, something like that. Because after you finished your cohort of the Ivy League Challenge, I think we may have talked once or twice after that at some point. And I think I've talked to your dad more than I've talked to you, but it's been a while. And so when we reconnected just a few days ago, it was just absolute joy for me, not just to see that you were doing so well, but for you to share gratitude and excitement for the benefits or the advantage that it was to join the Ivy League Challenge. And I just thought that was so special. And so that's really important to explain, because you're not applying to school in the United States. You're not going to apply to college in the U.S., which is where all of my focus is. I only do U.S. College prep, not U.K. or anywhere else. And the UK is very, very different. It's very much whatever your test score is, whatever your GPA is, that's where your potential landing spot is. Like, there's not this holistic evaluation like there is in the United States. And so, again, tons of context there to get just to the first questions. But I'm curious, to begin this evaluation of the IB versus AP versus blended versus other opportunities and how to succeed, all of that is going to be so wonderful. But to begin, can you just help us understand? You told me that there were some positive things that happened, even though you're not applying in the United States, from our cohort from a few years ago. And so if you could just share kind of what your high school experience has been like and how the Ivy League Challenge influenced that, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. So I remember, like, first when I started the Ivy League Challenge. So one of our first tasks was to write a eulogy for ourselves. And I remember... So this year I was writing my personal statement for the UK. And I remember it was like such a similar process where you go into like this deep state of reflection. And it's kind of something that you just never enter before, unless like you do maybe a lot of meditation, which I don't really, but you're just going so much in depth into your like academic successes, your personal successes, like room for growth. And it's just something like, it's not that common where you look back on yourself and like praise or like show off yourself that much. And I feel like that was such a similar thing that you did in your eulogy, which prepared me so much for writing my personal statement. And also, like, the biggest thing you emphasized, like the impact project, So like I started with one of my friends where we did like, we started a club in high school, and then we started in 10th grade, and now we're like seniors in high school, and we're almost about to finish like our leadership in the club. And just like using that as our impact project, where we're pretty much like raising money for different associations in Singapore. And I think like our most recent project, we raised over like $2,000, which is like incredible for like, you know, just a group of high school students to do. And that was like solely through starting this impact project. It's just like great for you to reflect on that and just like have it throughout your high school.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. And even more so, I don't want to, you know, probe this too far, because I am excited to get into the IB and all of that. But you had mentioned that perhaps some of your study strategies and your focus and discipline and your emphasis on taking care of your body also really paid off as you got into this really, really intensive IBDP program.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, like, I remember also part of the Ivy League Challenge was, like, we had this checklist of stuff we had to do every day. And it was, it was super balanced. Like, sleep every night, drink water, do exercise, but also focus on your academics. And I think that's probably one of the, like, key things you need to do in the IB to succeed. Because it's such a, like, academically rigorous course where, like, sometimes it is easy to just get carried away by, like, saying, oh, I don't have time for this. I need to study. But genuinely just like taking a couple of minutes, like 30 minutes out of your day just to go for a run makes a world of a difference. Like you can clarify your thoughts. You can just like, just have some time for yourself in that way, which is so like imperative just to like get back when you are studying and just like have that clarity in mind.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. So that is what I wanted everyone to hear. I thought that was so valuable when you shared it with me. And I think for those of you, still, a lot of my listeners are Ivy League Challenge students and parents of Ivy League Challenge students. And so just to remind you guys, here's Nandita at the end of this incredibly ambitious journey. The full International Baccalaureate Diploma Program is the most rigorous curriculum in high school. I've taught the IBDP, and I've also taught A-levels, and A-levels are comparable, the British curriculum. APs, not even close, and honors classes and community college and all that stuff, not even close to the level of rigor as the IBDP or the A-levels programs. And so for Nandita to give that endorsement, I think that it deserves just a little bit of my spotlighting as well. Those of you who are listening in, take phase one seriously, right? You have to, it doesn't matter how ambitious you are, if your physical body and your mind can't support your ambition. And so, Nandita, thank you for that. Let's dive in to the IB. So help our listeners. I think most people who are going to be finding this podcast and listening to it because IB is in the title, they're fine. But I have a number of listeners that are going to listen to this just because they listen to all of my podcasts. And I think everyone should know a little bit more about the IB. Tell us, what is this program called the International Baccalaureate? How do you see the highlights or the elements that define the IB program?
So I think for me, one of the biggest things that distincts the IB from like other curriculums is the core, which is your extended essay, which is a 4,000 word research paper, CAS, which is creativity, action, and service, MTOK, theory of knowledge, as well as your internal assessments, which are kind of like mini, if you would say, research reports for each class you do. I think those are definitely like the most distinctive factors of the IB, and something you want to keep in mind if you're coming in and like maybe want to do the IB. That's definitely something you need to consider, because it's just something so different that like other courses don't really offer. But it's like one of the things about the IB that maybe like I see my peers are like, oh my God, my EE is due today, my IA. Yeah. So that's definitely like one of the hardest parts of the IB.
Yeah. Okay. So you gave a little bit of detail, and let's start with the EE, which is the extended essay. I've actually done an entire podcast episode where I interviewed a director of the extended essay for a school. And so people can listen to that. There's a lot of detail there, but I love what you said. It's 4,000 words, and it is academic research. It's actually because you have to find primary research sources. Is that right? You have to find primary data and analyze the primary data. It cannot be fully secondary. And so when we brought in experts, we brought in a couple of scientists to this podcast to talk about the difference between a quote-unquote research report and actual academic research, This 4,000-word research paper is based on primary data sources. It is academic research. And you evaluate that based on, you know, whatever your research topic is. And so how long do you work on that research paper?
So pretty much how our school, my school does it is you start from November of your first year of doing the IB until January of the second year. So it's quite a while, like almost 1.5 years where you're just going super in depth into research and writing about it. So yeah, that's pretty much how long. And you'd spend like hours a week just like refining and researching and adding to your EE, because you can't really do 4,000 words in one night. It's going to be like too much of an ask.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So a year and a half long project. Each student, at least in your school, connects with a mentor, with a teacher from that same subject area. And that teacher guides you or at least provides milestones and helps you understand what those milestones should be, because you've never written this paper before. But the teacher hopefully has mentored many students before you. And so that year and a half long process, and parents and teens who are listening in, I can tell you, having taught college level courses also, this is very valuable in college. Like, for you to be able to break down a 4,000 word research paper into 18 months of chunks is a really valuable skill to develop as soon as you're ready for it. But as I say that, Nandita, there are probably a number of high school students who feel like, you know what, that's not for me. And so that's probably true. The IB diploma program is not for everyone. Can you help us understand, before we get back into CAS and TOK and the individual assessments, which are great to talk about also, who do you think the IBDP is for? If someone's listening in and they're thinking, man, I'm trying to decide if I want to do full IB or some IB or no IB, and I need to make that decision this year, what are your thoughts? How would you guide them? What questions would you ask them?
So I think in my perspective, one of the biggest things is, I guess, your aptitude for research, because that's one thing the IB heavily focuses on. It's not really straight from textbooks. You really are like connecting with a lot of the sources around you, which is also something I really value, because it's great for like future like college and work, where you're not just looking out of a textbook. So that's one thing like I really emphasize on. And also, I guess, if you're not really undecided, but like about your future plans, maybe if you don't really know what you want to do, because in the IB, you kind of are forced to do a range of subjects. And that kind of really helps you for the future, where you could be wanting to be a doctor like at the start of junior year, but at the end, you want to be a psychologist. And the IB lets you do that, because you are doing such a like array of subjects. I think also, if you like interdiscipline, like connecting different subjects with each other, that's like a huge part of the IB as well, because like you're forced to think differently between each subject, but then also connect back to it, which is also something TOK emphasizes a lot of. And just be like ready for a lot of academic rigor. Like if you are a student that's like continuously maybe like at the top of your class, but you don't even have to be at the top of your class. You just like to study a lot, and you do find that like a really valuable skill of yours. That would be great for doing the IB.
Oh, I love your summary. I think that's really good advice. TOK, I know you've said it once before, but TOK stands for Theory of Knowledge. And I love how you tied in a couple of things. Number one, writing and research, or writing/research. You need to write a lot, and you need to work with primary data. And that's a new skill, right? Because no one's learning that. Very few people are learning that before grade 10 or 11 or 12 in high school, right? So that's a new skill, but you have to be willing to write and put your heart into your studies, because you're not just finding information and then repeating that information. You have to dive in and make the connections yourself. And then you need to communicate those connections that you found in your writing and in your assessments. So that's one really, really important thing. And then you mentioned interdisciplinary element of the IB, and how you're forced to take a variety of different classes. And I love how you pointed this out as well. Regularly, if the teachers are doing their job, you are regularly connecting one subject area to another subject area, or at least the teacher is asking questions that get you to, because maybe the teacher is a economics teacher and doesn't know exactly what kind of connections you're going to find to biology or something like that. But they're going to be asking questions. The teacher should be asking questions very regularly that cause the students to reflect. How does what we just learned about economics tie into what I learned last week about chemistry or biology or physics? And that interdisciplinary focus for those of you who are interested in schools like Duke or Yale, these schools that really hang their hat on helping students make connections across disciplines, you are really well set up. You have just such a strong foundation for that. All right, so help me understand TOK, theory of knowledge. What does that mean?
So that's actually a really great question, because when I first started the IB, I was like, what is TOK? I was like so confused about what it was, and like the responses I was getting, I was like, okay, that's kind of vague.
Yeah.
But the best way I can describe TOK is just asking questions and questioning the world around you. That's pretty much the entirety of TOK. It's kind of, in a way, philosophical, but you really are questioning like the minute details of things around you and then connecting them to bigger ideas. And especially like when you begin to write your TOK essay, which is like, I guess, the final exam you do for TOK, you're connecting like what you've learned in the IB with like different subject areas and how that connects to, I guess, your interpretations of the world around you.
Beautiful. I've actually never heard it explained that way, Nandita, and I love it. I think that's more practical. Every time I, you know, explain it or have someone else explain it, you get this, oh, it's the theory of knowledge. Like, how do you know what you know? And that's always so vague and so difficult, but I love that. It's asking enough questions to start to get into, to become curious about why you believe what you believe and how you decide that this new knowledge is worth accepting or it should be filtered out and not accepted as part of how you see the world. That's beautiful. Really, really good description. So TOK, or Theory of Knowledge, is a required class and a part of the IB Diploma program. The extended essay is a required element of the IB Diploma program. And then you mentioned one more thing, CAS. Tell us what CAS is. What is that?
So CAS stands for Creativity, Action, and Service. And this is other core part of the IB where you're pretty much doing experiences outside of your academics, but it can kind of link back where you're kind of giving back to your community, exploring your interests, and kind of just like having that non-academic side of you where you can find balance. So for example, you could be learning the piano and that could be a creativity aspect of CAS, or you could be, I don't know, doing sports like cross country or soccer or any of that. Mm-hmm. And that could be your activity. So it's pretty much just finding your outside interests from your academics and then connecting it back and logging in. So like how my school does is logging in reflections, and that's how you would record CAS.
Yeah, beautiful. And I have had just a quick mini break here for the listeners. I've had full IB diploma program students from Canada and the United States and around the world who have asked me to log into their manage back and to manage back is the system that we use to keep track of all these activities that Nandita just described. And I've had students ask me to be their kind of advisor to confirm that they did the work that they did on their impact projects. And so here we go back to kind of the beginning of this discussion. Almost all of my students, and this is a huge bell, an alarm that I want to ring for you Ivy League Challenge students, your impact project. So first of all, TOK, your theory of knowledge. Well, actually, let me start here. A lot of IBDP students feel like, oh, well, school is already so hard. I'm going to do the bare minimum on TOK, theory of knowledge, and then CAS. And you can't do the bare minimum. There's no such thing as bare minimum on the EE. You really have to put your heart and soul into your extended essay. So a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to do the bare minimum on theory of knowledge and CAS. And for those of you who are applying in the United States, the theory of knowledge is how you develop your mind in a way that helps you answer those essay questions so well in the college application. They also help you to have conversations with teachers that lead to outstanding letters of recommendation that talk about your thoughtfulness, how unusually thoughtful you are. And then your CAS, that's your impact project. Okay, that's the project you've been working on already ever since you joined the Ivy League Challenge. So just grow it. Absolutely live into that. Don't neglect CAS and TOK just because Everything else is really rigorous. CAS and TOK can help you keep that balance and keep your health and your mental state strong so that you can recharge your batteries after class, so you have fully charged batteries for class. All right. So Nandita, and you keep shaking your head. Those of you who are listening and not seeing the video, Nandita, it seems like you really agree with what I just said, but maybe you can say out loud what you're thinking as well.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to add, like, CAS does not have to be this burden a lot of students see it as. It's seriously just like finding things you love and just documenting that. Cause like a lot of you maybe already be doing CAS outside of like normal school. You just don't realize it's CAS. Mm-hmm. And that's really just a good way to just, cause you don't really, like Mr. Gardner said, you don't have to be doing the bare minimum. Like a lot of what you do outside of school is CAS. You just have to record it and then there it is.
Yeah.
You don't really have to put that super extra effort into it.
Yeah. But you need to be a healthy human to be doing things outside of just coursework, right? And that's the point, is if you're being healthy, if you're taking care of your body and your mental health, then you're going to be doing CAS, right? And so let's be strategic about it. Let's do the things that have the maximum benefit and huge community impact that align with your core values, rather than just whatever is most convenient or accessible or whatever, however you choose. Okay, awesome. So that is amazing, Nandita. Already so much value. I think you've described kind of the strengths and the struggles of the IB really, really well, so that someone who's trying to decide, do I want to do IB DP? Do I want to do some IB classes, but not the full IB diploma program? The full IB diploma program, CAS and TOK and the EE and the IAs, they're all required. Whereas for just taking one IB class or a few IB classes, you don't have to do that whole array of stuff. And so hopefully we've given enough information that someone who's trying to decide if they do IB or not can make some decisions there. But let's go a little bit deeper into your experience and what you've seen around you, because your class, your high school is huge. You've got hundreds of seniors that are graduating with you, and you've seen everything from students that just rocked the IB like you did, which, by the way, everyone, Nandita asked me to let her stay humble and not share the exact predicted score, but it's very far north of 40, which is really, really amazing. Like anything north of about 38, 39 is just fantastic. And she's almost at the, she's just rocked the IB DP. And so, but you've seen people struggle. You've seen people rock it like you have. You've seen people do a blended program, and you've seen people do no IB. And so once you're in the IBDP, let's say that you decide to go all in and you're in it, what are the challenges that you can expect, or what are the things that you saw trip up other students or that you almost got tripped up on?
So I think one of the biggest things I want to emphasize on is motivation and consistency, because it's super easy, because especially since it's a two-year course, it's super easy to lose motivation, be like, oh, I'm not doing well, I can just drop out of this course, it'll be easier. But really, in hindsight, like, you look at it and you're just going between highs and lows, like I did. I was like, oh my God, I'm doing so well, finally. And then like the next month, I'm like rock bottom again. And you just need to acknowledge that you can't really be at the top from like day one, and you need to see growth. And I guess when you start from the bottom and you build your way back up, that's like the most valuable thing you can see. So I'd emphasize, like, be ready for growth, be ready for change, and accept that you're going to face highs and lows, because you can't stand at the top from day one. And I think that was like one of the hardest things about the IB. So just like losing motivation and keeping consistency, and definitely procrastination and time balance. That was like one of the hardest. Like, it's so easy to be like, oh, my IA is due in like 2 weeks, I'll just do it later because I have time. You don't have time. You need to keep that balance.
Right. Or your extended essay isn't due for another year. Very easy to procrastinate even a huge project that's a year away, right? Yeah,
exactly,
I can absolutely see that. So you saw people procrastinate and it really bit them. And then you found that for you, the highs were really high and the lows were really low. And the challenge for you is kind of keeping an even mental state, or even keeping keeping your head on your shoulders. So how did you do that? How did you level out your emotions to kind of balance yourself out that way?
I think the best thing I could do was, like, when I was at my highs, I had to recognize what I was doing right so that I could continue doing it. But when I was at my lows, it's kind of hard when you're at that position, because you're like, I'm doing so much work, why is it not working out?
Yeah.
But it's kind of just you need to remember to keep your mind focused and be like, okay, I'm not doing this right, and I need to see how I can improve. And like a big way you can do that is like get into peer groups, or like find your best way of studying, like whether it be like maybe one-on-one tutoring, or like just sitting by yourself, or I don't know, big peer groups or talking with friends. I think that's just one of the biggest ways, even talking to teachers, because they have so much experience and they've seen so many kids do the IB. Yeah. So it's just like one of the biggest ways to like get ahead of the game.
Oh, so good. This is why, for those, again, for Ivy League Challenge students, when we talk so much about reflection, like some people just grow older, they don't get wiser. And some people, as they grow older, they get much, much wiser. Why? Well, reflection is the key to, is not just experience. After you experience something, you have to reflect on it and decide what that means for you. And your reflection should get deeper and more profound as you get older. And that allows you to gain wisdom. If you don't reflect, if you don't try to learn from your experiences and what you've gone through, you don't reflect on it, then you're not going to become wiser. You're just going to become older, right? And you might even become crustier and less wise. You might become less capable than you were when you were younger if you don't stay reflective. And so basically everything you just said, reflect by yourself, reflect with one friend, reflect with small groups, with big groups, with teachers, and just constantly be reflecting what went well, what am I doing right? What, now I'm off track, what am I not doing right? How do I get back? Constant reflection. And that's why literally every single day in the Ivy League Challenge, we rate ourselves on those words that we choose, that we choose for ourselves, right? The words that represent the best of who we are. And you're saying, take that and just go one step further. Start reflecting with groups, start reflecting with big groups, small groups, teachers, and more. Absolutely. Definitely. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Such good advice. Looking back now, what would you say, you're glad that you chose to do the full IB program?
I think I am. Like, there was definitely points at the like middle of the program I was like, oh my God, I kind of regret it. But like towards the end, I like have half, I've half a year left with the IB. I'm just looking back, I'm so glad I did it because it taught me so much. And like, you, like for me, I started off pretty low. And then you just find that because it's a 2-year program, you have so much time to grow. And you're just like, you kind of, you do the impossible. You're like, you go from the start and you just go through so much growth and you're like, how did I do this? Like, how did I just write like 5 IAs within this amount of time? How did I do the EE? Like, it's just such an incredible program that allows you to like grow so much as a person and just like have that right balance where you're doing research papers, where you're studying from textbooks, and you're doing things like CAS and TOK that allowed you to like go that extra step further and just like progress you as a person in a way.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. Oh, that's so great. It pushes you, because as a teacher, so here I'm going to step in just a little bit with my experience. I have taught the IBDP and I've taught other curriculums, like I've mentioned. And to watch students, because when you develop a skill, so many people think that the key to becoming great at something or the key to deciding if you have potential is how quickly did you pick it up at the beginning, right? If you start and you're kind of a natural, oh, you've got some talent here. You should really do more of this. And a lot of people think that's how we get good at something. We're just naturally inclined to it. We start out strong and then we stick with it. And that's not true at all. The key to being great at something is being willing to be bad first, right? To really fall down and fail at it and say, wow, why did I fail? What did I do poorly? And then to go through that really, you know, time intensive and energy intensive and emotion intensive process of rewiring your brain, of developing muscle memory, of developing what you need to develop the skill to become great. And it is not this experience where, you know, you put 1 hour in, you're going to get 1 hour out. You put 10 hours in, get 10 hours out. It feels like you put 10 hours in and you got only 1 hour out. But eventually you put 100 hours in and suddenly it feels like you got 1,000 hours out because you hit this critical point where the skill just skyrockets. But until you get there, it just feels frustrating because you can't do it. And I love what you're saying. It's a 2-year program. If you stick with it and stay reflective and stay focused and stay with it, you can shock yourself at how much you can grow in what ends up being a very short period of time.
Yeah, 100%.
That is so beautiful. I'm so glad you have experienced that and you can kind of explain that in your own words because you've put in the work. There's no other way to be able to get to where you're at right now. So I think that's a great place to kind of transition to your advice. There are plenty of people listening in who are wondering, you know, what they should do for high school. But if you were to kind of look back at yourself from 3 years ago, what advice would you give yourself, or what advice would you give to someone else who's kind of in your shoes at that point?
I think one of the things that kept me through this process, and I would want to say to someone who's like starting freshman year, was like, prepare yourself for the highs and lows. Like I said at the beginning, like, it's so hard to get like demotivated when you're like at your absolute low, but like, just think about it this way. It's like, you can only go up from there. And I think just keeping that in mind, like, you're at your low and you can improve. I think that's like something you need to know. And also just like keeping balance and like get ready to adapt and grow. Cause like me from ninth grade compared to me, like almost at the end of senior year, completely different. Like,
yes.
Your mindset, your skill sets completely adapt and change. And mm-hmm. I think that's just like definitely one of the things I want to emphasize. Like, and it's not just like, it's not gonna come to you easily. Like, you do need to put in the work and the effort into it, but you'll see, like, you will find motivation in that. You'll be like, I want to strive for the best. And when you find that, that's when you find you are gonna go like super high and you're soaring to those high levels.
Oh, I have to say, Nandita, because I do have a different perspective from you. I watched you as a student in my course a few years ago, basically your freshman year, when you said big difference between freshman year and senior year. I cannot believe the difference. You are just beaming with confidence, but it's not the kind of confidence that comes from arrogance or from anything else. It is that quiet confidence that only someone who has put in the hard work just exudes. Like, there's no way that you can not exude this confidence because you've put in the work. This is who you are today. And 3 years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it was, three and a half years ago, when you took the Ivy League challenge for the first time, you were excited and you were hopeful, but you were scared. You were nervous. You were not anything like the confident person that you are today. And to see that growth and to have the unusual experience of having you in the course and, you know, really getting behind you and cheering you on and just loving having you in the class, but then completely cutting off contact. You know, you've gotten busy, I've gotten whatever. We just haven't connected for like 3 years. And then to see the difference after 3 years, it just, wow. It is absolutely inspiring. And I think anyone listening in is probably thinking, wow, this Nandita is an incredible human being, an incredible teenager. I'm not sure that that's me. I'm not sure I can do that. I'm not sure I can handle all those things and get such a high score and do so well. That's just not me. And I would just want to emphasize, I don't think this was you 3 years ago. You were not this person 3 years ago. And you chose to grow into it. You chose day in and day out to first to rate yourself. I'll just let everyone know. We rate, so starting in week two, students start rating themselves every night in their effort, their focus, and effectiveness. And then in week six, they change the three words that they use to rate themselves every night based on the three words that they have discovered about who they are at their best. So these are things that every Ivy League Challenge student does. And those of you who are listening who have started doing this, but you got off track, you forgot about this, time to get back on, time to re-rate yourself at night. But those are those little things that you do that keep you from having your highs go too high, your lows go too low, that keep you from getting overwhelmed or getting discouraged, because it keeps you focused on what can I do today? Not what's due in a year or a year and a half, not, you know, what is someone else doing that I can't do? None of that. We keep our focus on what makes us the best of who we are. And look what happens, everyone. Look at Nandita. I just want to spotlight you forever. This is so great. You can go from even a shy, you know, excited, enthusiastic. You were definitely enthusiastic. You were definitely excited, but you were shy and you were not who you are today, right? You were just kind of naive. I hope that's not rude. You were kind of naive and you were just kind of, well, I don't know, a little bit flighty even. And here you are just so grounded, so strong, so unbelievably inspiring. I just can't say enough about it. So Nandita, you are walking the walk in the best way possible. I absolutely love your advice.
Thank you so much. I mean, I couldn't have done it with like the support from the people around me, like definitely like your course, the teachers around me. It's just like, it's just, yeah, you need the people around you to do what you need to do to soar to high levels.
Oh, that's great too. Yeah. Be resourceful, right? Don't just think that you can do it on your own. Be resourceful, find resources, find people and ask for help. And amazing. Nandita, I can't thank you enough. I think that this is going to be so valuable for so many people. And every single, I get regular questions about, should we do IB? Should we not? I get this all the time. And so I'm so happy to have a podcast interview that I can send to people. Well, listen to this and see what you think, because it's really true, right? What Nandita described is a really good description of the high, the good, the bad, the really, really difficult, and the wonderful. It's all of those things, and it's not right for everyone. And so be sure to come in with your eyes open and be, if you're not fully committed to curiosity and learning and better writing and better research and better thinking, if that's not, you're not ready to fully commit to that, the IBDP might not be right for you. And so this interview is so helpful. I can't thank you enough, Nandita.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk today with you.
Oh, it's so wonderful. All right. Thanks, everyone. Music for this episode came from We Are Here by Declare P. I'm Steve Gardner. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and share with a friend. Thanks for listening.